The John Age Project.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
I'm your host, John Age. Thanks for tuning in to the broadcast today. You're now listening to The Anomic Age. Got a great show for you today. A guest I've been looking forward to talking with for a long time. Sabo will be with us today in just a mere matter of moments. But before we get into that, please check out AnomicAge.com. Share the link, friends, family, loved ones, enemies, everyone in between. Now's the time, folks. We got to unite to fight, so to speak, if you want to take that metaphorically. Good. So metaphorically, we got to unite to fight the communist, global, satanic, cabal, pedophile, death cult that is bent on taking over the nation. So it's time to unite indeed. So share the links, AnomicAge.com. You can check out all the shows from the past there, the video, the audio, the information about me. You can contact me direct, john@anomicage.com. All the social media links are at the top there as well. I recommend subscribing to all the subscriptions, liking all the likes. And, of course, the most important part for me, because it's free for you but not free for me to do this whole thing, you can make a donation, paypal.me/anomicage, patreon.com/anomicage. If all that went by way too fast, just go to anomicage.com. All those links are there on the right-hand side. The information breakdown segments are there as well. I had one just posted, I think, less than 24 hours ago. And there's plenty more from the past, and there will be plenty more of those information breakdown segments coming up. Well, let me underscore this. If you like the content, if you like all the guests, because you can listen to all that audio and watch it for free anytime. It takes a lot to keep the lights on around here and do all the stuff that we do. So if you love it, if you like it, if you're just sort of fond of it, make those donations to the Patreon and the PayPal, please. It would be nice, for sure. That being said, hold on to your hats. We got Sabo coming up in just a mere matter of seconds, so stick around. It's my pleasure to welcome the artist Sabo into the Anomic Age today. Sabo is an American political guerrilla artist based out of Los Angeles. His name Sabo is derived from the Sabo round shot from the M60 series main battle tank that he crewed during his time in the United States Marine Corps. 2 decades working in startups in the design field provided him the knowledge required to create his pieces from concept to completion. Sabo believes the importance of his work doesn't so much lie in the craftsmanship or even that he's one of the very few who create this brand of right-leaning brass-knuckle art. The importance, he believes, is in opening people's understanding as to how much of our country's ills are rooted in the leftist messages we are constantly bombarded with, from the news media, arts, Hollywood, music industry, and education. Sabo, I'm so excited to talk to you.
Well, thanks for having me on, man.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's like, I get harshed on for the name. I have very intellectual types say, oh, you stole the name from Jean-Michel Basquiat. He calls himself Sabo. It's like, no, Basquiat, when they would say, hey, man, hey, Jean, how you doing? He goes, oh, Sabo, Sabo. That's where that name came from. Mine came from a gun round. So it's not my fault they kind of sound the same. But
I love it, man. I'd much rather it come from a gun round than the former there.
Yeah. I just, the gun round is, well, it's a tank round. And of the five tank rounds, it's the shortest, hardest, fastest one. I'm like, I'm short, I'm hard, I'm fast, too. Why not? But it ends with a T, but the T is silent. So I believe it's a French word. Hmm. So anyways, yeah, I love the French.
I like it, nevertheless.
Yeah.
It's well, like, I thought we'd start things off with just probably a really baseline question for everybody, but perhaps not. And I really hate the way the communists have foiled and sort of transformed every word and its meaning. But what really woke you up to what's going on? I mean, I know you were from Texas originally. Is it that that environment, or is it the military environment? Is it just your upbringing that sort of woke you up as to, hey, things are pretty fouled up around here?
No, you know, this may sound bold. But I believe maybe it was Michelangelo or maybe Leonardo had a saying. It's like, there are people that see, there are people that see when they're shown, and there are people that will never see at all. And I truly, that, you know, growing, ask questions. You know, why is this this way? Why is this that way? I was always interested in politics. I mean, hell, since I was 6, 7 years old, I was watching the political roundtables and Saturday cartoons. But that's why I love Sundays, because Sundays they had the roundtables. But, you know, you just have all these questions. And I don't know, you know, I wanted to study business, but then what, the eternal question, what kind of business? And then I had a friend of mine who was on a tank. I was on a tank with, and he wanted to be an advertising guy and a graphic artist. And, you know, I kind of put a bug in my ear. So I learned how to do advertising, graphic design and everything. And one day I had acquired all these skills and I had all these political thoughts, and I just thought I'd marry the two. And, I was working with the startups, and the one thing that there are a lot of people out there that really wish they could be doing something that they loved, but they're just trapped doing what they're doing. And, you know, they call it, sometimes if you're getting paid well, they call it the golden cage. Hmm. And, you know, okay, you got the steady paycheck and everything. You got the big house and the nice car and or cars, but you need to stay in that cage in order to maintain that lifestyle. And, I was never of that ilk. You know, it's like, you know, I had a job that paid reasonably well, at least by my standards. And, I knew that I wasn't happy. And, I said, well, I'm supposed to be happy. You know, you're making some money.
Yeah.
And it's like, no. And then one day I found myself completely broke, and I said, consider this a blessing. It's like, if you can find happiness here, you can find it anywhere. And my focus was, and I had left that job that I had hated. I was in my late 30s at the time. And I was very, you know, I had no responsibilities. I didn't have a wife or kids or a mortgage or even a car payment for that matter. And I learned how to live very lean. And again, I had a serious political opinion. And I just said, you know, when you get hungry, if you have paper and paint, and that way you won't think about how hungry you are. And then before you know it, a client will come with a deposit. You build them a website or do their design, and boom, you have a couple bucks in your pocket. You can eat and you move forward. I did that for years. And, you know, I was very consistent punching hard, and I made it a point that I punched hard, because I knew that there were so few of us on our side, and I knew there's so many on theirs. And I would look at people like Shepard Fairey, and then Banksy came out of nowhere, you know, out of England. I think I caught wind of him around 2005. But, you know, I knew that I wasn't a bad person, and I knew for damn sure that I wasn't rich. So to constantly hear the people on the left go on about how I'm the bad guy because I'm on the right and I'm rich, I have a yacht, I'm a racist and all these things.
You're privileged, don't forget, you're privileged.
And I'm like, wait a minute, that's not me. And And when I realized that everyone who defines the people on the right are the people on the left, I'm like, why don't we define who we are? Why are we leaving it up to them? And then, you know, it was a rhetorical question. The answer was fairly clear. They were the ones in charge of the narrative. You know, they were the ones that were able to tell you what things were because they had Hollywood, they had the music industry, every actor, every anyone that whispered in your ear or that you saw was basically a leftist, and they were all telling the same story. I'm like, you know, I really think we should start doing that as well. But for some strange reason, people on the right seem to think, well, I'm not a leftist, I'm not a liberal, so I'm not an artist. It's like, okay, I don't want to say that that sounds reasonable, but if you role play that whole thing to the very end, what you're basically saying is there are no storytellers that believe the way you believe now. You know, they're all bankers and lawyers, and they're all chasing their tails to make a shitload of money. That way they can get married, have kids, and then decide that, whoops, I think I'll have an affair now.
Yeah.
You know? Life is boring. And I hate my job. It's like, no, why don't you do what you love? And that's what I did. You know, it's like, and then one day I managed to find a way to monetize it. And, you worry. You're like, oh, I'm going to lose so many friends. It's like, well, if you're going to lose people because of your beliefs, and trust me, they're not your friends. And as soon as they're gone, the sooner the better, number one. And two, you're going to pick up twice as many people that think like you. And I'm not saying a person should live in an echo chamber. I'm just saying it's like I will still be friends with a communist. You know, I'll still be friends with a socialist. I'm not going to discard someone I consider a friend because they don't think like me. Mm-hmm. It's not until they kick down my door and they want to take my guns, then we're going to have a problem.
That's the truth.
I don't know. Next question. That was a very long answer to a very short question.
No, I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. And I couldn't agree more because I think that a lot of people really do let the fear guide them, whether it's fear of losing a job or fear of losing friends or, you know, just fear of having somebody mess up your car or steal your hat and try to beat you up in the street at this point in the game. So, I mean, I think that's one of those key elements that a lot of people, pun intended, are afraid to mention or focus on. But it's a very real part of this whole thing, I think.
It is now. It's like, you know, we've been taking on Antifa for years now. And I remember when they were just a bunch of little skinny soy kids that just wore black.
Yeah.
And this is a very crude example, but there was a guy named Kyle Chapman. They called him Base Stick Man. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
I remember. Yeah, I saved the videos of him.
Yeah, basically he just ran out. He was in Berkeley or something, and he charged out with a stick and cracked one over the head, and it splintered, and then it just went viral. And not only did the crack on the head go viral, also, oh, he's wearing a baseball hat. Oh, he has a shield. Oh, and now all of a sudden – Antifa's like, they march in, they're wearing hats, and they're wearing shields, and they're wearing armor. And it's kind of like, I can come up with some pretty brutal things to do to people. I mean, in terms like in a crowd.
Sure.
The only thing that keeps me from doing it is they're going to look at it and go, that was pretty smart. I think we're going to do that next time. And it's like, I don't want to feed the beast like that. And when you consider the police stand down, and that's when I learned the importance of who your mayor is. It's like more times than not, you don't even give it a second thought. Everyone wants to run for Congress, the Senate, the presidency. No one thinks about the librarian. You know, no one thinks about the city council or the mayor or any of that. And if COVID has taught us anything, it's just how much power these people sway. And the mayor tells the police chief, or the mayor is the police chief, and they tell the police, you're not going to arrest those guys wearing black. You're going to arrest the guys with American flags. And they will do it. It's like I literally saw Antifa have a pizza party and throw their crap everywhere, and the Berkeley police came and picked it up after them.
Jeez.
And they would not arrest Antifa for love or money. They made sure we were unarmed. They made sure we didn't have any protection whatsoever, but they allowed Antifa to march in with clubs, bottles, explosives, you fucking name it, they had it. And that's a very long way of saying, you know, if anything, that just emboldened Antifa. And now they went from being these skinny little soy people wearing black, now they're wearing helmets, armor, bats. They're very organized. It's getting quite huge. And I guess the main question is, if your son was to, or daughter was to walk in the house and they're wearing a black hoodie and you hear them mumbling something about something that they did on the street, would you call them on it? I believe a lot of people wouldn't. And that's why these are someone's kids. I mean, how the hell do these kids roll in their home and their parents don't understand what's going on? It's like, I don't get it. But so basically, yeah, they're emboldened. They're completely emboldened. I mean, a lot of parents will say, oh, they're just kids. You know, they're sowing their wild oats and they're Marxists. They're being indoctrinated by their teachers. They're being indoctrinated by their peers. And when they decide to throw a Molotov cocktail into a police car and they find themselves doing 25 years in jail, you're going to wonder where you failed them. Mm-hmm. So I get the fear of not having certain bumper stickers on your car that you'll get keyed. And it's just really sad that that's a reality. Because, I mean, if I see a Bernie sticker on a car, I'll just laugh.
Yeah, it's like a moron. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
I'm not going to key your car. It's like, that's the kind of shit kids do. It just kind of also begs the question, if we got a bunch of kids, I was going to ask, if there are a bunch of kids that all of a sudden get red-pilled and they lean more towards the right, when they see a car with a Biden sticker, are they going to key it? Mm-hmm. And the answer is no, because I don't believe that that's in our culture. And what I mean by that is, when we have a rally, we generally leave the rally area cleaner than when we got there. That doesn't happen when the left meets. When the left meets, they basically trash the whole area. And what they've been doing lately is they'll burn down your business. Mm-hmm. And how they can't, you know, I was watching the beatings in D.C. this weekend. You know, Antifa was attacking some Patriot people. And as they're chasing them down and throwing things at them and pushing them and tripping them and laughing. Could you not see those videos of 1930s when they were pushing around the Jews and stripping them of their clothes and the Jews are screaming naked on the street and getting their hair pulled and the good German people were looking at them and laughing? It's like, are you incapable of seeing the similarity? Do you not know that's who you are now? And, you know, growing up, that's one of those questions. I mean, you study culture, you teach culture. It's like, how can one culture not see what another culture has done? And it wasn't that long ago. I know growing up, I always questioned, how is it people could knowingly and willingly put children on a train and they know they're not going to a good place, mm-hmm. and live with themselves. And it's like, and the answer is becoming a little more clear. It's like the first time I asked that question, or the first time I saw some light in the answer, or at least the first time I got a hint of an answer, was when in the early to mid 90s, everyone was going on about, oh, this is rape. That's rape. You know, if you kiss a girl and she doesn't want you to kiss her, that's rape. Oh, you know, and this was just going on and on. And for a while, I was like, holy crap. You know, it's like, it's going to be really hard to even date. You know, it's like, to be an aggressive male, it's really hard to ask someone out to begin with. And when you finally get the balls to do it, sometimes you can come across as pretty aggressive. You know, because you got to break through that fear of rejection. And it could very easily be translated as, oh, my God, you know, this is a rapist. It's like, no, I'm just asking you out. And then what happened? Bill Clinton accused of multiples. And the very people that were pushing that narrative all of a sudden circled the wagons around him.
Yep.
And I'm like, wait a minute. You've been telling me for years that this is unacceptable. And now this guy does it in spades. And you're circling the wagons around him? It's like, if I were you and if that was my guy, I wouldn't support him. I wouldn't defend him. And I saw that first chink in the armor, that first little sign of inconsistency, of intellectual dishonesty, and of what they were willing to accept to have their person in charge. And I've heard, hey, he's my rapist. You know, he'll do for me what I want done. If he wants to go out there and rape a couple of women in the process, that's his business. You got to break a couple of eggs to make an omelet. And I'm like,
so insane. I was going to say, you mentioned the bumper sticker thing and the questioning the answers thing. And I know I mentioned this with another guest in the past, but it bears repeating. You know, when I was growing up, you used to see the sticker on cars all the time said question authority. And I jokingly say I don't see those anymore because I don't think anybody is questioning anything, or at least the vast majority of the public just seems brainwashed into it. And I think it's a multi-generational thing. I think for a lot of people, if they're the parents and their kids are coming home with the all black and they're rocking some Antifa patch, they're going, good job. I want to go out there and join you, because I think they're just as fouled up as the kids are. And sadly, because they went to the same stupid education system that's going –
I don't want to say that this is when it started, but I remember when someone would utter a profanity in public. Someone would say, hey, man, don't say that. There's kids around.
Yeah, exactly.
These days it's like it's everywhere.
All bets are off,
man. People are just like it's nothing. And unfortunately, I've been talking to you for the past couple of minutes, and I've thrown out a few F-bombs here and there. But I assure you, if we're out in public, you'd be hard-pressed to hear me talk like that, especially if there's kids around.
Yeah.
And if you're with me and you're just, like, overly that way, I'd probably say, hey, you know, can you tone it down a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. But, you know, there's just no sense of decorum at all. I mean, you'll go to a movie and someone will answer the phone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, we're in a movie. That seems small, but it's like, no, what that means is people don't care anymore.
Yeah, they got no respect at all.
Rodney
Dangerfield, no respect at all.
Yeah, absolutely no respect at all. It's like, I'd like to think that I do have, you know, harbor some of that understanding in my mind, in every little thing that I do. But anyways, I don't know.
And it's wild to the point with the youth these days. I mean, I think it's so sad how the generation is right now, because when I was teaching in person anyway, I would always see, you know, a university campus, you always see, well, let's just be real, a lot of very attractive women there. And the guy to girl ratio is always tilted towards the ladies. But unfortunately, I would walk through the halls there the last few years and everybody would just be looking down, like guys included. And like there was no, I would say, like attempt to ask anybody out or attempt to talk to said attractive lady or anything like that. It just seemed like this consumption with the device has really taken precedent, along with the Me Too mess and everything is rape. If you look at a girl, it's rape. Or if you ask her out, it could be construed as rape. I mean, my buddy and I, both married now, are just like, man, I'm glad we're not single, because we would probably not be with anybody, I guess, because you can't even ask somebody out without getting accused of some sort of, you know, hyperbolic.
I ask the same question as well. I mean, how would I fare? And I think I'd be doing fairly well, because – my understanding is you just have to own up to who you are.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, this is who I am. Go screw yourself. I'm not a rapist. It's like, fuck you. And you just have to own it. And people admire that, you know, people say, wow, I can't believe you said that. But, I don't know. It'd be interesting. I'd be thrown out of college really fast. I'm sure of that. It's like I left the art center. I was in my fifth term, And I just said, this is ridiculous. I just got up and walked out. And she's like, you can't leave. I said, the hell I can.
Sure you can.
It's like, this is ridiculous. It's like, there are a lot of people here that want to leave. They just can't because they want that degree. And, you know, they seem to think that that degree is going to be the answer to their life. And it's like, no, I learned more out in business than I'd ever learned in school. And it's just that. I mean, I don't know. It's the kids, interesting times, man. And you know, when I would work in studios, I remember when I was 26 years old, 25, and I was in a studio. I remember seeing this 40-year-old guy, and he was like in his little cubicle, and he looked scared to death. Because every young kid at the startup was looking at him like, what's this dinosaur doing in here? He's 40 years old. And all I could tell them was, you know, this guy brings a lot to the table. He's been around for a while. He knows about typography. He knows about layout. He knows about color, you know, all these things that a graphic designer should know. And okay, true, he used Rubylith. Mm-hmm. And we don't even know what the hell Rubylith is anymore. But it's like, that's one thing. I mean, he brings so much to the table in terms of experience. So don't harsh on him just because he's 40. I mean, this isn't Logan's Run.
Yeah, we're all going to get there sooner or later if we're not already there. So.
And then one day, you know, I woke up and I was, you know, 40 and I was in my 30s and in a studio, and then people were looking at me like that. I didn't shy away. I'm like, screw you, man. It's like, if you can find someone that can do what I do better, hire them. It's like, you know, you get to that point in your career to where, you know, I remember the distinct moment when someone came in to interview for a job, and my thought was, oh, my interviewing for my job. What if he's better than I am? And I'm no longer the lead designer. He's the lead designer. I found a sense of peace in that. If he's better than me and he's working here, I'll learn something from him. And, I'll learn something from him. And, I'll look at it like that as a blessing. But the moment I was able to do that, I was able to relax and I was able to just be me, you know? And, I've never done that whole ageism thing. I truly believe people bring something to the table. And I would rather hire someone in their late 30s than a 25-year-old any day, because chances are they at least have a work ethic. And you know, every young person that kind of wanted to work with me, they're like, can I come in at 11? And, you know, and I'm not going to work on Friday. And, oh, by the way, I got to leave at 3. I'm like, well, when the hell are you going to work?
And I got the special disability, so I'm going to need a special chair.
Yeah, it's like, when the hell are you going to work, man? It's like, no, dude. I mean, I remember times when I was sitting at the front of the door of the business that was locked, and I had to wait for someone to open it. You know, I was the first one there, and I remember walking out at 9 o'clock at night, 3 o'clock in the morning. I was the last one out. There's nothing more beautiful than having someone ask, how the hell did you do that? You're not supposed to be able to do that. And it's like, yeah, it's like hell, last night I was working on an image. It's like, I'm not a photographer. And, but you would never know that, because I don't mind sitting with an image and spending hours on it, days on it, to make it pop the right way. And when I look at it, I look in terms of animation. It's like, how can I animate this image, and how can I break it up, and, you know, and all these sorts of things. And most people aren't capable of doing that because they're just flat out lazy. So, you know, whatever, I don't know.
So much of what you're speaking to right now probably goes back to that entrepreneurial spirit that you have as well, which I don't think even exists. Well, I won't say ever or at all, but for the most part in our current society. I mean, I used to give everybody a little survey on the first day, and I'd basically say, why are you here? And I'd say 98% would just say, because this is what you do. You just go to school. Or you know, they're like 2% would say, because my mom and dad made me. And everybody else was like, this is what you do. You can't get a job. You can't be anything unless you get this sacrosanct piece of paper and you've been blessed by the gods of academia land that you're worthy. And it's just so disheartening. So I love what you're saying, just to the contra of that point, where you're saying, yo, you don't have to follow that plan and you can still do what you do.
Yeah, I'm looking for my degree here. It's like I took a – I didn't – but I found a picture of it in my files. But when I got up and I walked out of college, I took a piece of paper from those, like it off, and it's got those ruffled edges. And I wrote, I did the logo of the college. I put Art Center College of Design. I took it to a teacher. I said, could you sign this for me? So what's that? This is my degree. And then I go, all right. So they signed it. And I had a couple of teachers sign it. And then I saw the guy that was running the school. He may have been on sabbatical at the time. I don't know. But I saw him. I said, hey, man, here you run this school. I was wondering if you could sign this degree for me. He looked at it. He says, what's this? I said, I'm leaving. He said, why? I said, it ain't worth the money. I said, fair enough, and he signed it. And that was my degree. I think it's got coffee stains on it now and stuff. And everyone's like, dude, you should frame that. But it's like, I said, there's no way I'm going to leave. I told him, there's no way I'm going to leave this place without a piece of paper. And he said, fair enough. And you know, the scary part is, you know, time goes by and I read like architecture or advertising, one of those art magazines. I forget.
Yeah, one of those trade publications.
Yeah, one of those trade publications. And I read an interview by a teacher who was obviously a leftist. And she's like, well, if you need a degree to do someone's hair, we need to make it to where you need a degree to do graphic design. So basically, they're trying to make it illegal to do graphic design unless you get the holy blessing from a college. And if you choose to build someone's website or make someone's logo without their certification, you go to jail or you get fined. And it's like, no, that's scary, because what that means is I now have to go to college and look at all the signage everywhere that says, we don't hate, you know, love, not hate. No. And you know what that means. It doesn't mean love, not hate. That means you better think like me in every fucking aspect, or we're going to call you a racist, Nazi, right-wing, homophobe. And it's like, dude, you don't have to tell me that you don't hate people. I think we all got that, you know. but it's like, you know, I tell people, I think it's funny that, you know, when I was in high school and junior high and hell, the whole trip, it's like I went from being a beaner, a spick, and a wetback to now I'm a white right-wing nationalist. It's like I didn't get the memo. When the hell
did
that?
A transformation, man.
Yeah, it's a hell of a transformation. You know, it's like. Yeah, every now and then you'll get – the most hate that I get is when somehow my art makes it onto the Huffington Post. It's like when the Huffington Post runs with it, ooh, it's like you're going to die. My site gets hacked. Everything gets hacked. And, you know, believe me, dude, if they knew where I live, they'd be camped out front throwing bricks through the window. But it's – I don't know.
Well, I got to say, I don't think it would bother you. I feel like you've got that warrior spirit, which I think is so important in art, or at least in the type of art you do. I mean, art can go the spectrum from the dogs playing poker to a kid drawing in the sand. But to do the art that I think people are meant to do, the art that you're doing, it's supposed to be controversial. It's supposed to raise the brow of people, and it's not going to be for the lighthearted that's going to be timid and say, oh, you didn't like my work. Huh? Well, I'll change it for you. I mean, I don't see that coming through you at all. So,
yeah, it's I'm working with a gallerist in Canada, and we're trying to find a name for what I do, like pointillism or a fauvism or the bow riders or whatever. You know, if you were to come up with a name, what would it be? So I'm like doing some research on art movements, and I ran across a show that the Nazis had, and they called it The Degenerates. And, you know, they had this big degenerate show, and they had, like, Chagall and Picasso and basically all the artists back then. And they were basically just saying that these people are trashy art, and we're the Nazis, we're the master race, this is what art is. And when you listen to these academics talk, they have it in their minds that this is obviously wrong. What they did to those artists, these are the greatest of the greatest artists. And, you know, what the Nazis did were wrong, and the people that they elevated were wrong. And, you know, they miss the irony that they themselves are doing the exact same thing today. They're the ones that the leftists are the ones that are saying that's hate speech. Deplatform him. Look at the art that he did. That's wrong. They don't call it degenerate. They call it deplorable. That's wrong. And they're like, this are the people that you should be. Look at George Clooney. Look at what Michael Moore is doing. This is art. And it's like, and the thought that people who should know better simply aren't aware of their own irony, their own inconsistency, is scary, because they're the ones that should know better. And, you know, I like that I'm on the fringe, and it's a hard place to be, man, because a lot of people just don't have it in them. I mean, they really don't. They talk a good game. And, you know, the whole thing about the whole warrior spirit, it's really easy. And I hear a lot of people say, you come to my door, I'm blowing your head off. And you know, they'll have their gun and they tacked out AR and everything. And
they got every single piece of equipment on there they can get.
They have every piece of equipment. But what they don't understand is when, you know, I was talking to this one ex-Marine, and he's like, yeah, you know, these kids, if they're like loitering by the shop, I'm going to show them my gun and they're going to know I mean business. That sounds good, but what you don't understand is the second that kid whips out their iPhone and takes a picture of you brandishing your weapon, guess who's going to jail? That's the reality. It's like the whole Rambo factor really goes away, and you have to be smart enough to understand that, because these kids, they're told how to play that game. And you know, there does come a point. It's like, I mean, I deal with this in a very realistic way. It's like, I've confronted my share of people, but I know where the line is drawn. But I also know the second their feet hit the ground and they're on the property and they're running towards the house, they're getting shot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sorry, they're getting shot. You shouldn't have done that. And I know that I'll probably get in trouble for doing it. But, it's like, we're living in crazy town. We're just living in crazy town.
Yeah, I mean, these people have a PhD in being the victim. I mean, they've been taught that since they were born, practically. So, I mean, that's to your point. Naturally, that's the role they're going to play. They're going to pull that camera out and say, oh, well, this mean old man, he brandished his weapon at me.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I talked about a number of things, but going back to the teachers who should know better about, like, the whole degenerate movement and the deplatforming and everything. I have a tendency of losing my train of thought, in which I just have.
That's all right.
but it's like, I don't know. It's what was it going to be? I was talking about the teachers. And, well, anyways, let's just move on to something else.
Yeah, that's fine, man. No problem at all. We'll come back. You'll think of it on the way home or something weird. That's what I always do. I'll think of the answer the most odd times.
Yeah, these teachers should know better. It's a shame, because artists should know. That's what really disappoints me about artists. It's like, growing up, you know, you always heard that, oh, freedom of speech, you should never censor an artist. You know, art is sacred, except yours. And I learned a long time ago that the people in the 60s, when they said, like the people in Berkeley that started the free speech movement, they weren't concerned about free speech. They were concerned about being able to speak the things that they wanted to say. It's like the moment you said something that went counter to that, they were going to squash it. They were going to censor the hell out of it. It's like, you could be Mapplethorpe and shove a bullwhip up your butt, but God forbid you do something that questions Planned Parenthood. It's like, and you see these inconsistencies, and then it just gets worse and worse. It's like you start to see who these people really are, and it's just getting worse. It's like, now they're actually violent. You know, now if they don't like what you're saying, good luck. But I don't know.
Well, one thing always and still that drives me nuts is the double standard of it all. And that's one thing I really love about your work is, from my perspective, its game is to sacrifice the sacred cows. Like, there is no sacred cows within your work. So you're not going to say, well, I can't say this about Ilhan Omar, or I can't publish this about the great Bernie Sanders or anything like that. And so much of our society now is just predicated on this safe space and this political correctness. And we can We can criticize everybody, but we can't criticize them. Or we can say this about everybody, but not them. There's always this, it's absurd double standard, which drives me nuts. I mean, it's always driven me nuts since I was a kid. And it's just become in sharper focus as I've become older. It's just, it drives me insane. Why the hell are we like that now?
I don't know, but it kind of goes back to gaining my train of thought, but it kind of relates. I think it's odd that, and you had mentioned this, that they still think that they're the rebels. You know, they still think that they're somehow behind enemy lines. It's like, oh, you're the establishment. You know, Shepard Fairey, Banksy, all these people, they're very much the establishment. You know, you have your Hollywood's on your side. Half of the political structure is behind you. Half of the Republicans are behind you. Mm-hmm. It's like the globalists. They're right in league with the Democrats. You know, you've got, like I said, you got Hollywood, you have the entertainment system, the music industry, you have everything. It's like you have social media, you have everything. How the hell are you a rebel? You're not an iconoclast. It's like, you know, one of the things that I kind of see as a bit of a medal is obviously getting heat from the left is par for the course, but I also get heat from the right. And it's like, When you find yourself in that area, in that sweet spot, that's when you become an iconoclast. It's like you're very much on your own. You're testing the wires, and you're pissing everyone off. And it's like they can't ever tell you why in a way that makes sense. But whatever. And another compliment, one of the greater compliments that I get and I appreciate is when someone like Tucker Carlson will look at me and say, I looked at your body of work, man, and you don't sound crazy. You're not crazy. You make sense. You know, it's like on the surface, you would expect a crazy man. But when you look at it and you see a level of consistency, it's like, you know, you're not. And I tell people that I don't stand up on a hill going, you, 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 you. It's like, no, there's actually some thought behind what I do. It's like, during this last election cycle, people are like, do this, why don't you do this? And they'll give me all kinds of ideas. And I don't know how to tell them. It's like, you know, one, the whole point is you do it. Yeah. I want other people to do it. It's not just me. That's number one. You know, it's not just me. But it's not exactly a good idea. And it's not the kind of thing that I want to put my name to. It's like I want to do something that I think is smart. Pops. And, you know, I'd rather do far fewer things, but good things than not. And, you know, one of the things I'm working on, that image that I'm working on, is the whole cancel culture thing. It's like, you know, you've got Aunt Jemima, the cream of wheat guy, the little Indian lady from Lando Lakes Butter.
I did one with I can't think of her name. Pocahontas on there.
Yeah. It's like they're taking them off of the packaging because they think that that's somehow rude or bad, or I don't even know what the hell, how to word. I have to figure out how to word it. But so what I did is I found a picture of a homeless guy and I turned him into the cream of wheat guy, and I made like a life size poster of him sitting there homeless, and he's got his little cream of wheat hat and everything, and it's obviously the cream of wheat guy. And it's a life-size poster. What I did is I put it on a tent. I went to a homeless place, and I taped it up to a tent, and it looks like the cream of wheat guy is sitting there at his tent. And
that's amazing.
So basically, it's just another unemployed black man and compliments of the left. And don't they understand what the hell they're doing? Well, I do. You know, once again, it's rhetorical. It's kind of like taking down a statue. They want to take down our history. They want to take down our traditions. They want to take, you know, I think of cream of wheat, and I think of when I was a kid and grandma made a bowl of cream of wheat. They want to take that from me. And that with that photograph and that series that I'm doing, and I also did one with Uncle Ben, and I'm going to do one with Aunt Jemima as a hooker now because now she doesn't have a job. But if you notice, Little Debbie still has her job.
Yeah, she's still on there. I can't understand.
Yeah, you know, if you notice, Colonel Sanders still has his job. It's like, what the hell is going on here? It's just odd. But, you know, those are the – see, I think that's – I like that concept. And that's the sort of thing that I'll put my energies into. So, you know, I tell people I like driving down the street and I'll see a signage, and then I'll have, there's something going on in the news cycle. So you have Bird One meets Bird Two and bam, they hit. Mm-hmm. And I can't deny the thought. It's like, that's a good concept. And then I'll put everything aside and focus on it and knock it out and boom, boom, boom. And I want it to make sense. It's not like I'm just jumping on every billboard just to do anything. And, so I don't know if anything that, I would like to think that that's what makes it art. And I want to make sure that it makes sense. Like I've got this piece here called Fag the New Nigger. And it's like on the surface, it curls your hair. I mean, it took a lot for me to hang that on a wall and in an apartment. And people are like, wow, you're a racist and you're a homophobe. And I'm like, no, it's got, I understand where you would come up with that. I understand. But that's not the that's not the situation behind this piece. That's not the context behind this piece. I went to a Prop 8 rally, and I saw these two young men creating signs. And the reason they were having the rally is because Prop 8 was passed. And what Prop 8 was, it was pushed by the Mormons and made it to where gays can't marry. Mm-hmm. And I believe that was 2012. And one guy looked over to the other and said, "We fags are the new niggers." And I knew exactly what he meant. I just wanted him to clarify. I said, when he said that, I was like, whoa, I can't believe he just said that. That's one left-wing camp talking, you know, about another left-wing camp. And I'm like, so what exactly did you mean by that? He said, well, the gay community supported the black man for president, but the black community didn't support the gay community against Prop 8. And so now we're at the back of the bus. And they were making signs. They were making protest signs. So I thought it would be powerful if someone would make a sign that said, "Fag the New Nigger." Now you could be a simpleton and just look at it and say, wow, that's a horrible, well, you know, you shouldn't do that. You know, that's wrong. You're racist. You're homophobe. You're this, you're that. I say, no, that's what art is. You know, art engages you. Art should ask you, why the hell would you make something like that? And there's actually an answer. You know, I'm not some toothless, methed out redneck in Georgia that says, I hate whites and I hate niggers. Why not? It's like, no, there's actually some context behind the piece. And that's that. So that's one of my more favorite pieces because, if anything, it's probably my most favorite piece because it is probably one of the most powerful pieces that I have. If you were to just look at it straight on, you would like, whoa, what's going on here? And it tells you a lot about, you know, why art is important, how art works, why it's the way that it is. And it very much speaks to my brand. And, you know, it's gloves off, brass knuckles on, and very few people would do that.
Well, I think that's what art is supposed to be. I mean, I don't know if it was Gavin McGinnis was the first to say it or somebody else. I don't know. I'll give him some credit for it, I guess. But he was saying that being conservative is the new punk rock. And I know one of your pieces has got Johnny Rotten on it, rocking some MAGA hat or some gear or something, because he came out in support of President Trump. And I couldn't agree more because coming out of that punk and hardcore and skating scene that I was in, I mean, I thought that's what it was all about. I thought it was all about being iconoclastic and going against the
established
conventional. Yeah, the establishment, not becoming the establishment, which is what, you know, when I look back at all the punk and hardcore now, it's like that's all it is establishment. And ironically enough, you know, Banksy and the like establishment. So it's all kind of the establishment claiming that they're the rebels, claiming that they're these iconoclastic heroes when they're really just
not.
Stay in step. It's not out of step anymore. It's in step. Get in step.
Yeah. It's like I said, they know what side the bread is buttered. And I truly believe that they believe it. You know, I want to say that, and to some degree, they do believe that they are rebels, but I have literally seen them. I've literally heard them and seen them. They'll like laugh and they'll tell you straight to your face, oh, you know, capitalism, all capitalists are pigs, all capitalists are this. And then you'll mention, you know, how much are you selling that piece for? And then they'll kind of laugh and they'll go, yeah, you know, but sometimes we use it to forward. It's like, you're full of shit, dude. You're full of shit. shit.
Exactly.
And even worse than that, you know you're full of shit. And it's like the thing about like a Shepard Fairey or anyone that pushes this anti-capitalism stuff in terms of their art, but I'll just say Shepard, I don't think that it's bad that he does it. I think it's evil, because what he does is he kicks out the rungs of the ladder as he's climbing up it. And he's basically, as a multimillionaire, a famous multimillionaire artist now, he's telling people, don't follow the way that I took because it's evil. And I'm like, dude, you know, what's going on here? You're not making any sense. And I remember once I was talking to a friend of mine about investments or something, which I know little or nothing of. And he kind of educated me. He says, this is why you can't invest in certain things, you know. And he was educating me. I'm like, why didn't no one ever teach me that? You know, why did no one ever teach me how to make money work for me? And why is it every time I get a couple of bucks, my first thought is to spend it? You know, why isn't it, how can I have it work for me or as an investment and how to invest? And why is it the only thing I was ever taught growing up is that capitalism's bad, rich people are evil, and all this kind of stuff, instead of empowering me, you know? And it's like that's why I think people like Shepard are evil, because it's like the very systems that made them, they just undermine. And even worse than that, they leave the next generation out in the woods thinking a certain thing that isn't true. So, and don't get me wrong, man. I see capitalism as a piece of dynamite. It's like a dynamite. You can put it on the side of a mountain and blow a hole so you can drive a truck through it, or you can put it in a baby carriage. The dynamite doesn't know any damn difference. You know, same thing with capitalism. It's like, you know, I had a shop in Louisiana when I was living in Los Angeles. My stepfather had died, and this guy's like, hey man, my wife divorced me. She was cheating on me, and you know, he was disabled and everything. He's like, I really like your shop, you know, and it's like I would like to park a trailer behind it and then turn it into my workshop. And he could really only muster up like $10,000 less than what I was asking for the shop. And you know, I did everything that I could to help him build up his credit. I gave him time. I said, you know what, you can rent it. Let's try and build your credit up. For 2 years, we'll see if we can get your credit up. And then hopefully you can get the amount that I want for the shop. And then I'll put the amount that you put in into the principal. And then, you know, you'll buy it to own it, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know of anyone that would do that. He said, could you give me a year? I said, I'll give you two. And the 2 years went by. His credit still wasn't that good enough. He could still only afford a certain amount. I looked at him. I just said, you know what, man? Enjoy your new house. And you know, that was a capitalistic venture going on there. Yeah. And you know, a lot of people would have just said, fuck that. I'm going to see if I can get the whole amount. And you know what? Screw you, old man. And I'm not, you know, maybe I'm just a bad businessman. When people ask me to speak, more times than not, I would say 95% of the time, I say, sure, yeah, I'll go. I'll have my little speech and then whatever, have lunch with them, dinner with them. And then there's some other guy, I'm not doing it unless you pay me to speak. I think Mark Levin makes like $25,000 every time he speaks at some place or some crazy like that. And I'm like, and people would say, well, that's your bad monetary decision, Sabo, not theirs. And you know, true it is. And there may come a time when maybe I can get $5,000-$10,000 per speech. But if a school asks me to come and speak to them, they don't have a ton of cash, you know, I may just do it for free or a lot less. As I said, capitalism is not a bad thing, but it can be exercised in a brass knuckle way. You can just say, you know what? You're all fired. I'm moving my shit to China. And you know, I know damn well those people are slaves. I know they're treated like shit and they don't get paid anything, but I get to save money making my product. See, it could be used that way as well. It's like, so, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't demonize capitalism as much as I would the individual that practices it. If that makes any sense.
That makes sense to me. I think you got to have a little bit of grace and you got to have a little bit of have a soul. You know, but like you mentioned that guy in Louisiana, I mean, sounds like the right move to me.
I didn't regret it at all. It's like, I didn't regret it at all. There was another example that I wanted to make, but it's like, I don't know, man. I don't know. But you know, with people in houses, it's like people buy these houses and they're like, oh, it's worth $1 million. I was like, dude, that house at best is worth $300,000. What are you talking about? And yeah, I remember when the housing bubbles picked up. I'm like, you do realize you guys are increasing the price of a pizza. I said, what are you talking about? Well, now, you know, that guy, his mortgage is going to go up or his lease is going to go up. He's got to either chintz on the ingredients or raise the price of the pizza. And when everyone's doing it, you basically just screwed your kids. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, yeah, okay, now my house is worth however much more. But the sad thing is your grandkids aren't going to be able to afford a house.
Yeah, a slice of pizza is $10 now.
Yeah, when that time comes, your kids aren't going to be able to afford a house. Congratulations, you stuffed some couple bucks in your pocket, but you basically just fucked the entire system. And it's really sad to see. But that makes – my wife says that makes me sound like a socialist. But it's like, no, it's not that I'm a socialist. It's just that I'm not running – you know, when there's a fire in the house, I'd like to think that I'm the guy that's going to run in and grab the cat and the baby and run out as opposed to be the guy that's pushing everyone aside. That way I can make it through the door.
Yeah, knocking people over.
Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of people are that way. But it's all right then. Next question.
Yeah, makes sense, man. It makes perfect sense to me. It's kind of funny. I was going to ask you this, and it kind of is the polar opposite of what we were just talking about having grace and being a little bit more kind and nice to people. Because overall, I would say those on the conservative bent, yourself being the exception and me and a few others, I'm sure, are just playing too nice. And that's what I love about your work as well, is that it's not playing nice. It's not asking permission. It's not trying to pander to this so you get some money or pander to that so to get play on Fox. It's just honest and it's true, and people should love it, but they might not. But it's just facts. This is true. You know, you got the Nancy Pelosi piece in the salon. You had the flying monkeys with Hillary. I mean, there's so many other ones, but it's not playing nice. And I think that's what everybody needs to stop doing. Stop playing nice. Stop taking that proverbial high ground. Yeah. And you're not going to wash the pig by standing on the side of the barn with a hose. You got to get in there a little bit.
Well, when I go to like a gathering or something, everyone there is like 70 years old, you know, and I believe a lot of people that are hoping to make money on our side want to cater to those people because they're the people with the money.
Yeah.
And the last thing they want to do is offend those people. And it's like I go and I ask them, why the hell didn't you bring your grandkid with you? Or your son or your daughter. It's like, why is everyone here so damn old? Don't get me wrong. I appreciate you being here and everything, but it's like, we need fresh blood. And it's like, and fresh blood understands piss and vinegar. And I don't know how to word this, but it's like, you know, you have the good hair, the polo shirt, the brick house, the right car, you know, the whole thing that everyone fights so hard for. I'm saying, you know, man, grow your beard. You know, do what you want. I'm not saying just let loose and become a dirtbag. I'm just saying stop trying to be this facet in this mosaic of boredom. It's like you can live your whole life that way, but why would you? It's like – what that turns into is that turns into a weekend boating, you know, that turns into like a barbecue. And what I mean by that is, you know, I was talking to some people and they're like, you know what freedom is, man? You know, what's wrong with these leftists? You know, why are they trying to take freedom? Freedom is like, I asked them, why don't you fight hard for the freedoms that you have? Their answers sometimes are, well, freedom is my right to just go out there and drink a beer and go to the lake and have a barbecue. It's like, no, that was a product of freedom. You know, that was a product of decades and decades of, you know, people having this freedom. What we're starting to realize is those freedoms were fought for. You know, what we're starting to realize is the freedom to just be that family man that just is able to focus on your family and able to focus on your job and your house and your kids and all these little things and your little barbecue on Sunday and watching the game. All those things are being challenged right now by people. They want to take those things away. They think that's bourgeois or whatever. They think that that's very white of you. And it's like sometimes those things need to be fought for. And what I mean by that is you need to be engaged. You at the very least have to know something about what's going on politically. But of course, a lot of people don't want to do that because there's nothing sexy about politics. There's nothing fun about politics. And they would rather just watch the game, football or something. And it's like, let me tell you, the left is very engaged. It's like, I remember I went to the national conventions, and on the plane, I jumped on the Republican plane, and everyone's like, hey, Sable, how you doing? Every time that I ran across someone that knew me. And that was it. I jumped on the plane with the Democrat National Convention. They were singing, laughing, and you talk to them. Every single one of them had, I'm the lead designer for the congressman running for whatever. Everyone was engaged in play. And not only that, they were having fun doing it. And it's like, you go to CPAC and oh my God, they can't do it. I remember the main donor for CPAC freaked out because the young ladies had red heels on their stilettos. It's like, you can't wear red heels to CPAC. This is a conservative. I'm like, dude, what the hell is wrong with you? And he's an old man. He's in his 70s. And like, he gives millions of dollars in order to make CPAC happen. I'm like, well, that sucks. I'm like, why don't you tell him to go fuck himself and go find five people that can donate the same amount of money and maybe throw a little more Elvis into CPAC? Oh, you want to move the Overton window is what you're trying to do, Sabo? It's like, no, not really. It's like, I'm just trying to.
I think the communists are trying to move the Overton window.
Yeah. It's like, I'm just trying to, why do you put forth a certain facade only to go home, open up a bottle of scotch, and then just let your hair down? It's like, that's kind of fake. Why don't you just do that? Why can't you just be that person? Because I assure you, these other uptight people are doing the same thing when they go home. And it's like, that's how you're able to blackmail people. That's how you're able to blackmail people. It's like, oh, we got photo and video of you doing this. Well, hey, Sable, we caught you with a $500 hooker. It's like, yeah, it's because I couldn't afford a $1,000 hooker. It's like, go fuck yourself. That hasn't happened. But I'm just saying, you need to be able to talk to these people. It's like when someone says, like, hey, like, Sable, I fucked your mother. I'm like, have you seen my mother? It's like, you need to be able to slam that ball right back to them.
Exactly.
In a way that's not personal. It's like, one, you don't know my mother. Two, you did not have sex with my mother. Three, if you did, dear God, man, aim higher. Don't make it to where, oh, you said this about my mother, I'm going to fight. I can't fight everyone that has a problem with me. It's like, and like I said, more times than not, it's not personal. And don't get me wrong, man. Every now and then, I do run across really good people that live really good lives. And there are times when I'm like, I look at myself and I'm covered with 30 years of L.A. And I'm like, and I look at them, and all I could do is wish that I was them. I wish I could live in whatever world you're coming out of and believe the things that you believe. But it's like, I think God has blessed us with a mind to explore this place that he's put us in. And I've been adventurous enough to go places most people won't go. And if a good man can turn bad, then that bad man can once again turn good. And that was a meditation that I had for years. And that requires a great deal of looking inside and accepting and acceptance of everything and all this kind of stuff. And I think it's sad that a lot of people aren't willing to do that, you know, but,
that's the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say that it comes down to this, but what you were saying, it really is kind of a marketing thing. And I would completely agree that the conservatives just don't market very well most of the time. Well, I remember when I was growing up, I had no clue of what the heck was going on with Iran-Contra or so forth and so on. But all I saw was these really old guys. And so I didn't identify with that at all. It wasn't until I got older that I started putting these puzzle pieces together. But I think that's where a lot of folks are now in that millennial and a little younger, a little older demographic, where they're just looking at all these old white guys and going, oh, well, they're the enemy. Well, number one, we got brainwashed that through the cult of academia. But number two, they just can't identify with that. I mean, they're not marketing like Bernie is to the millennials, you know, or like think of that boob in Texas that was talking about taking the guns away off the top of my head. But
Beto?
Yeah, Beto. Thank you.
Yeah. You almost answered your question. And I hear this a lot. And everyone answers that particular question. They just don't get that they did. And what I mean by that is, and I don't want to say therein lies the importance of what I do. But it's, as I said early on, I said, when you're a kid and you want to be a creative, you automatically think you're a leftist. So mm-hmm. you start bringing in all their beliefs and you make them your own. And as I said, we need to start making our people. They say that the right has the better product, the left has better advertising. And it's like, so therein lies the answer to your question. You just need to learn how to advertise better. It's like, you know, you have people all day long, oh my God, all these Mexicans, they're coming from across. They're going to start voting Democrat. They're going to switch the vote. We'll never have another Republican again. Wrong. What you don't understand is the people coming from Mexico, they're generally family oriented. It's not like they're running across the fence with boas in transsexual wear, and they're following the lead of Hollywood. They're very, very family-oriented conservative people. The thing is, you have to convince them that they're with us, and then they'll start voting for Republicans. And I assure you, as soon as they understand what the hell the shit that the left is pushing, but they need their vote to do it, they're going to start voting on our side of the fence, which you're starting to see already with this last election. More blacks and more Latinos have voted for Trump than ever before for a Republican. And as soon as that happens, as soon as we up our game in our advertising of our more superior product, the Democrats are going to build catapults to throw them back over the border. It's like, you just need to learn how to play the game. It's like, you need to be able to tell gay people, look, the left doesn't give a damn about you. If they did, why didn't they say anything when ISIS was throwing gay people off of buildings? It's like, why are they so supportive of a religion that the only thing they want is to make sure you're dead? And the left does everything in their power to support those people. And the answer why is simple. It's because they're significantly anti-American enough. And therein lies the totem pole. The totem pole is, you know, you have your gays, you have your Mexicans, illegals, you've got your this, now you have your Muslims. It's like, what makes up that totem pole? Who is at the top of that totem pole and who's at the bottom? You know, you look at it and you're like, I know what it is. Who is more anti-Western? Those people are the ones at the top of the totem. It doesn't matter how gross they are. It doesn't matter what they believe. Because the whole point of the left is to take down Western culture. And they will support anything that does it, even if it goes counter what they believe. Even if it goes counter what they believe. And once you realize that, that's where concepts come in. That's where art comes in. And then you start thinking accordingly. And then you're like, you tell black people, you do realize Planned Parenthood murders, or they abort millions of black children every year. It's like Planned Parenthood is Democrat run. It's like, you know, Margaret Sanger had a great deal to do with Planned Parenthood, and she's a racist. And, you know, I think it's funny when you ask someone, it's like, do you know who the first black, or no, do you know who the first female millionaire was in America? And a lot of people don't know it was a black woman back in the 18-something. Mm-hmm. It's like, we didn't have our boots to the back of their neck. It's like they were more than capable of becoming congressmen and all these things, millionaires and business people. And God forbid if she ever, she wasn't a very attractive looking lady, but if she ever found herself like on the cover of her product, I assure you they would have taken her off because oh, you're making her look like a mammy. No, she's just wasn't a very attractive lady, but you know what? That was her brand. And yes, you could be black and you could be a millionaire back in the 1800s. So it's like, and you know, why don't kids know this? You know, it's like, because we're not telling them, we're not teaching them.
And it's not in the art or the media or the movies or anything else. They don't want you to know that. They want to know that victim mentality of, for us, it's been 200 years or whatever it is of oppression.
Yeah, and it's bullshit. I mean, it's bullshit. Oppression, yeah. But you know what? The Irish got it. The Chinese got it. It's like, this is a great country. This is a great country. Not always fair, but it's like, you know, that's how it is, man. Life is a struggle.
Indeed. Love yeah. it, man. Well, what was your great influence to do what you do, and what would you recommend to other people that should be doing what you're doing?
Well, you know, the first influence was the understanding that we were allowing the left to define who we are. And when you allow your enemy to define you, you're not going to be known as anything good. And so I said, you know what, we need to start doing that. And I did. And of course I did the street. I took the street art route, which a lot of people on the right wouldn't do. They're like, oh, that's what the left does. And it's like, well, not anymore. I'm doing it. And, So that was, you know, you go to Los Feliz and you're looking for Larry Elder's book and you find out that they tucked it away in the back and all the liberal books are in the front and you're wondering why. And then you listen to Bill Maher or any of these other people on television. And you're like, I'm like, why? And you read the newspaper or magazine and they're defining you as something awful. I've just said enough. That's why I did it. I said enough. I said, I have the skill. I have the skill set. Why not do it? And I did. And what would I suggest for other people? Do it, man. It's like, you know, these are the days when legends are made. You know, well, these are the days of the Bob Dylans, you know, people that speak truth to power. I've been saying this for years now. It's the water's wet. And what really pisses me off is you'll always hear me say this. And it's, I remember once I was at a party and I was telling this person, and then someone standing next to me says, you've been saying that for a long time, Sabo. And you know, he was groomed in Hollywood. He was in movies as a kid and all this kind of stuff. And he's all bummed out because he's a white guy and he can't get a job anymore as an actor. And he's all bummed out. And I tell him all day long, dudes, do your own fucking movie. You know, make your own studio. It ain't going to be an easy haul. Just do it. But see, he won't do it because he's used to there being a catering truck. He's used to that chair with his name on it. He's there to be pampered the whole time. And unfortunately, he's spoiled, and he's probably not going to do it because it requires a lot of work. There are a lot of young people out there who are learning. All you need is a really good iPhone and a website or social media, and you can become famous. It'll take a while, but you can do it.
That's good.
It's like I would just say if you truly believe – if you tend to lean to the right, and if you want to be a creative, you don't have to be a liberal. You know, are you going to be hated? Are people going to challenge you? Yeah, but that's the whole point. It's like, I don't understand. It's like, isn't the whole point being different? You know, I thought you wanted to be different. It's like, so what? You want to go with the herd now? Which would make sense if the herd made sense, but it doesn't. The majority of the people on the left, they know they're wrong, but they also know that if they open their mouth, they're not going to be able to work. They contribute to that by not saying, hey, I'm not with you 100%. And there are a lot of left-wing things that I believe. But and I'll tell you, you know, this is what I believe, you like it or not. But anyways, that's my advice. Just go out there and do it. You're going to get some hassle. But isn't that the point, you know, to be different, to take a few knocks?
But that's what I think they're afraid of, and I've mentioned this before, is they want you to fit in the box. They want you to fit in the box. They want you to feel, you know, yes, you have to believe and subscribe to every single thing Republican so we can put you in that R box. You can wear your special pin, your tie, and that's it. I mean, I've been some of those same sort of things, and I never fit in the box. And I've never fit in the box my whole life. I mean, I always jokingly said, even in the punk and hardcore and skate stuff, I never quite fit in the box, which made people uncomfortable. And here I am, like 43 almost, and still making people uncomfortable for not fitting in that stinking box.
I'm very much like that, man. I'm very much like, let's say, for example, we started a club, and then all of a sudden the club got big.
Then I'd quit being in the club, probably.
Yeah, I'm probably more likely to just say, you know what? I'm out. It's like, you guys go forth and multiply. And say, like the Proud Boys, they wanted me to be the president of the LA chapter. And it's like, I remember when the Proud Boys started. And, you know, we're sitting in a little pizza parlor there. And these guys are like, okay, we need a sergeant of arms. Okay, we need this. We need that. No, these are the rules. These are the regulations. These are the blah, 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 blah. I'm looking at these guys going, this is a drinking fraternity. You know, I'm going to go to get a Sam Adams and talk shit with some like-minded people. And that's it. It's like, you can keep your sergeant at arms. It's like, that's not what I'm there for. And the last time I was hanging out with the Proud Boys, they were taking it way too seriously. And I was like, okay, this is cool. You know, I love Enrique. He's like the chairman of it and one of the best people I've ever met. And but it wasn't me. It was like, no, it's, you know, oh, so what chapter are you in? You know, have you done this, that, the other? And I just said, yeah, I'm an honorary second degree. And what do you mean honorary? What chapter are you in? Well, I'm really not. And, well, then how are you a Proud Boy? It's like, why the are you asking me? It's like, I'm here with you and I'm drinking a beer and we're having a conversation. Isn't that enough? It's like, no, it's not enough. You got to be a member of the chapter and you have to follow certain guidelines and certain this and certain that. I'm like, fuck you, man. And it's like, well, and I told them from the get-go, I'm like, you're turning something that's fun into something that's very unfun. And the whole point is just to have fun. And so needless to say, I told Gavin, I'm like, dude, I'm a 50-year-old alcoholic. And the last thing I need to do is to be the president of a drinking fraternity.
That's the truth.
And not to mention, if I did become the president, things are going to change around here. And it's like, not that things were bad. I just wanted them to be fun. And I just wanted them to be fun. And that was that. So I don't know if you've heard of the Proud Boys.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, it's a good group of guys. It's like, you know, get some rough housers, but you know, whatever, dude. It's good that they're around. But
yeah, I could probably agree with you wholeheartedly on that one. I'm not too much with the organization, so when it starts being too structured, I'm probably gonna leave. So
yeah. What was that comedian that said, I don't want to be a part of any club that will take me?
That's a good point. I feel the same way.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like, I kind of feel like that John Travolta character on Grease when they're like, hey, man, you want to join the baseball team? Fuck you. I remember someone asking me that in Florida. Hey, you want to join our softball team? I'm just geared on a cellular level to just say no. Is that I don't want to be a part of your team or your group. And it's like, I'm very comfortable just, I've always pictured myself, you've got this tower and you've got people up above eating grapes and just living their life. I like being at the bottom of the tower, stand and watch, and, you know, just leave me alone. I'll make sure that you're able to do what you're doing, but I don't particularly want to take part in it. And I'll go up there and drink a beer every now and then. But and it bothers me that I'm so, I don't want to say contrarian in that regard, but I don't know. And I've been telling people recently, I'm kind of like the Tyler Durden character when he walks in the room and he sees the buildings on fire with a smiley face on it and everyone's cheering and he's looking at him going, what the hell are you guys doing? And they're looking at him like, what the hell are you talking about? You're the one that I'm very much there because You know, I woke up one day and it's like, hey, Sabo, hey, Sabo, hey, Sabo, everything, Sabo, Sabo, Sabo. And it's like, after a while, you forget what your name is. And you're like, wait a minute, this Sabo guy, he's a character. He's not real. And it's like, I had to create this character in order to do things I couldn't do normally in my regular life. And now all of a sudden, I'm Tyler Durden. It's like, where the hell does Tyler go when he's stressed? And it's like, and I found he reverts back to the nerd. And it's like, but no one wants to meet Sabo the nerd. You know, they want to see Sabo the ass kicker. And it's like, and at that point, you just lose your mind and you're like, whoa, what's going on here? You know, who am I? You know, I was listening to Jordan Peterson talk something about this, and it's like, you know, you can't retreat into that place that you created that truly isn't you, because if you run into problems, because that's not you, so you go into the whole psychological factor of the whole thing. So it's like, you know, it is what that is.
I totally get it. It makes sense to me. I mean, I'm using the pen name as well, so.
Yeah, as well you should. And that's another bit of
security and insecurity.
No, I tell people this all the time. It's like, create a different name, be anonymous, and say whatever you want to say, man. And, you know, and it's like, you know, eventually the time may come when you have to tell people your name, particularly when they want to write you a check and they want to know what name to put on it. You know, it just gets weird like that. But yeah, create a pseudonym. And well, that's kind of cowardice. Why can't you just be you and say what you want to say? Well, because I like to be able to feed my family. You know,
that's the key right there.
Yeah. And when the day comes so that we can all be free and speak our minds, and that's a different story, but that just ain't today. You know?
Man. Well, I know you got to go in a moment, but I was going to ask you this, which is kind of a broad, silly question perhaps, but how crazy is it in LA or Hollywood right about now? Because I'm over here on the far right side of the coast here. Yeah, and well, I can only go with what I see on the news or when I talk to folks like yourself that have lived it.
Yeah, you know, I've since left LA. I now live in Las Vegas. 30 years was enough. The thing is, it's crazy town. And it's like, people ask me, do you miss LA? And the only answer I can really give them is, I miss the LA that I knew. The problem is, you're going to have a lot of people, you know, back in the day when you can rent an apartment for $500, you know, $600, mm-hmm. You know, there weren't homeless people everywhere. The police did their job, you know. You know, there were places to go. I guess what I'm trying to say is there's going to be a whole crop of young people that are going to go into Hollywood and L.A., and that's just going to be what they know. You know, they're going to be comfortable with it because that's just how they know it. And I knew it as something else. And the generation before me knew it as something else. And the sad part is, you know, it's like boiling that frog. You know, that frog just never knows that it's too damn hot. And I think New York finally hit its boiling point to where people are like, you know, the reason why New York was cool is because you could be a hipster, be a poet, and still afford rent. But then all the money people said, hey, that place is cool. Look at all those cool people. And then they did up. And now you can't rent anything, everything's too expensive, and all those creative people moved off to other places. And you know, that'll eventually, I give LA another 20 years, because right now what they're doing is they're buying up all the little houses and they're putting up these huge 300 unit high rises that are going for like $4,000 a month. And that kind of begs the question, who the hell can afford to live there? You know, you're not even owning it. You're handing over $4,000 a month just to live there. It's like, I don't know who can afford that. So that's what we're creating in LA. And, you know, the thought of, well, if I become a famous artist and I'm selling pieces for hundreds of thousands of dollars, would you move back? So, you know, fact of the matter is, man, you never own your home there because you're always paying property taxes and it's always getting more expensive. And it's, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I'm enjoying the weather which is something we didn't have in California. In California, it was just perfection. Here, you sweat and you're hot, and then you're cold. And you're like, wow, Mother Nature, thank you for coming back into my life. you know, it's like, wow, we have seasons here. I know what it is to be cold now. I know what it is to be hot now. It's like, believe it or not, if you live in L.A. for 3 to 5 years, you get depressed, or at least you used to, because every day was more beautiful than the one before. And it's not like that anymore. Something changed with the weather over there. It's like, it used to be that way. I don't think it's that way anymore. But so anyways, I'm rambling.
Wow. That's pretty weird. Yeah, I got to say, I've never been to L.A., and I'm sure I'll make it there one day. But from the looks of things, I'm not in a hurry. So
I'd go to San Francisco first. If you had to go to the West Coast to visit, I'd visit San Francisco. You know, that whole area there. Believe it or not, you go the right time, the weather's beautiful, the place is beautiful. There's nothing more beautiful. It's sitting up on one of these hills, and you can see the Golden Gate Bridge, and the moon is reflecting off the bay. It's like, all I can think is, what was it like to be a Native American just sitting here seeing this? Obviously, the Golden Gate Bridge wasn't there, but just I can see why every rich person just moved up there. It's like, yeah, it just took it over. But so anyways.
Well, what would you like to impart everybody with before you go today? I feel like we've covered a lot. If there's anything you hadn't.
Well, I'll leave you with this. It's like, if Biden happens to steal this election, and we will all know damn well he stole it.
Absolutely.
It ain't over. I mean, things are going to be weird. If we don't – a friend of mine, Ali, posted something the other day or yesterday that I thought was different because it really wasn't us, but it should be. He said we should be out on the street, not burning down. Just like we did in D.C. this last weekend.
Oh, that was beautiful, man. I wish, yeah, I was there.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we should be out there showing the country and the world that we're not good with this. And that's number one. But two, the founding fathers were smart enough to see people like this coming. And if Obama could have destroyed the country, he would have. But it's like, we have checks and balances that the left is always trying to mess with. We have certain checks and balances that keep tyrants like this from doing what they want to do. This is the time the sleeping lion wakes the hell up. We start being more engaged, be a little more creative, start taking ownership of our narrative. And as Breitbart said, you know, politics is downstream of culture. Start having fun. Stop being such a tight ass. Start pursuing the things that you truly want to pursue and sacrifice for it. You know, it's like there's only so many polo shirts you can wear. So it's like, and you know, go forth and multiply. They're not going to be. He ain't going to run for re-election. He'll be dead by then. And you know, I believe the election of 2024 is going to be a madhouse. So it's like, so we look forward to that. This isn't the time to put your sword down and take a breather. This is a time to lick your wounds, and hopefully he still wins. But if he wins, it's going to be hell on earth here, and they're going to riot. But if he loses, we need to retool and come back even stronger. I believe we're going to. I truly do. Because there's not a Republican out there. Every Republican out there should be massively pissed off, because we now see what the left is capable of. They don't mind saying that what you do for a living is insignificant, or you're, what's the word? You're not essential.
Yeah, not essential.
Yeah, you're a non-essential person. Stay in your house. Oh, by the way, you can't open your business. They don't care if you can't feed your kids. They don't care if your kids can't get educated. I truly believe they set off this virus. They use it as an excuse for basically everything. It's like, I remember once hearing a story about a Roman, whatever. He's like, oh, those 30,000 people at the auditorium, butcher them. And he butchered 30,000 people. It's like the Aztecs, they're like, butchered 80,000 for a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. We are now seeing what our politicians are capable of. And they're from the left. And if you're not pissed, you're not paying attention. So for God's sakes, man, if you have an inclination to be an artist, go out there and speak our word. You know, start a studio, start your own design company, make your friends. Don't be afraid to say, this is what I believe. And you have to, because we have to be there for each other. And you're not going to be there for, we're not going to be there for each other if we're hiding in the bushes, you know? So, and I see this in the way we fight. I shot a video of Antifa fighting in Beverly Hills. And these people are committed. They will jump in there with bats, sticks, and swarm a person and beat the hell out of them. And if you look on the periphery, you see a bunch of right-wing people saying stop. You see a bunch of right-wing people just grabbing, and they're not jumping in there waylaying them back. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a certain philosophy there. One philosophy is a very committed philosophy. The other one is genteel. It's like, you know, there is going to come a time you're going to have to just start swinging haymakers. And I think that time is now. And you do it any way that you can. And there's no way you're going to be able to swing a haymaker if you're hiding in a bush. So, you know, this is the time to stand out and say, and then you're going to realize just how many people there are just like you. There are a lot of them. And thanks for having me on, man.
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more with everything you just said, man. I think it's a big psyop to try to convince everybody that they're isolated and alone. When if they look around and step outside of their city or hell outside of their state, they're going to find a hell of a lot more people just like them.
You'd be surprised. A lot of your neighbors are like you. I said, you know, well, unfortunately for us, we're the people that say, I don't talk about politics, religion, or sex.
Yeah.
You know, we're civilized in that way. The left doesn't think that way. The left will talk about everything. And it's like, and because we don't talk about politics, our neighbors don't know that we're of like mind. You know, it's like, when I was at this rally in Beverly Hills a couple weeks ago, I was surprised at how many people I knew from my past. They showed up and I was like, wow, you're conservative. I didn't know that. Hell, I knew you for how long? And it's like, they're out there, man. You just don't know, because people tend to keep that close to their chest. It's like, but, the more people are out there, and, you know, the more open that they're going to be. And I think a lot of people are going to be very open about it. So there's that.
And we got to start showing up. I kept talking to people this past week about the D.C. thing. So I was so mad I couldn't go. And I don't want to go. Why would you want to go? And I'm like, because the time for messing around is done. Like, we have got to show up, get on the field, and start making that presence felt. If for no other reason, to let everybody else know we're there. Let the president know it's more than a couple hundred people at a rally in some weird podunk state. I mean, there's thousands, hundreds of thousands. Yeah.
And then you got to realize the press really didn't cover it because they don't want people to know that millions of people are there. Then you got to realize who your enemy is. And then you got to realize we need to make our own press. And
yeah.
For God's sakes, man, don't sell out. One, and I tell people, what's your advice? Well, don't suck. You know, just because you're singing about the Star Spangled Banner doesn't mean I should like it. It's like, if you're going to do a song, if you're going to do a movie, if you're going to do a documentary, don't suck. Don't make me have to like it because you're a patriot. Once again, I lose my train of thought. But, you know, don't suck. And, hell, I don't know. There was something else, but I don't know, man. But just put yourself out there. I'm getting old.
That's the key, man. Just putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
Just try, for Pete's sakes. I mean, I love what you do. And I won't say everybody can do it because they can't, but everybody has access to a computer. Everybody can download a program. Everybody can start doing it on their own terms, whether it's just putting a word out there like freedom or liberty and posting that all over the power box near your house, or putting out whatever your version of it is. You know, everybody can do their part.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, most certainly. Oh, yeah, the point was, don't sell out. What I mean is, don't only do it for the money.
Yeah.
You know, when you do that, when a leftist comes up to you and says, I'll give you X amount of money for what you do, you'll probably sell out and say, okay, yeah, sure, here. Oh, you stuff your pockets. I know a lot of people on the right that are very successful, and they wouldn't do it if they weren't making the money, or they would sell out really quick if they thought that they could profit from it. They don't do that. You know, it's like, you know, through thinner flesh, you know, pursue what's in your heart. And don't get me wrong, I'm not against money. If you can make money, you can get rich doing what you're doing, God bless you. But, you know, don't make it your sole reason for doing what you're doing. And so there's that.
Yeah, don't sell your soul to get there. I mean, that's kind of the key to me.
Yeah.
So, well, what's the best way for everybody to follow you?
Well, if you go to my website's unsavoryagents.com. And, you know, if you just look up either Sabo, S-A-B-O, or just go to unsavoryagents.com, you can pretty much find me. If you Google Sabo Art, you'll probably find me, my social media and stuff. And, yeah, I play rough. You know, I play rough. And so it's like I say spicy things. So if that bothers you, at least I'm warning you now. And just leave it at that, you know. It's like, so, yeah, go to unsavoryagents.com. And believe me, the money that goes into my posters and T-shirts, more times than not, a good percentage of it goes back out in the street. So.
That's beautiful, man. I love it. Well, if you'll stick around for about 30 seconds, I'll wrap stuff up and say goodbye to you off the air.
All right. Sounds good.
Perfect. Well, as I always say, you can't do everything, but you can absolutely do something. So just like Sabo, all of our other guests, please get out there and do your parts. Try to make that difference to change things for the better. Until next time, be safe out there, and I'll be seeing you sooner than later in the Anomic Age.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to AnomicAge.com. That's AnomicAge.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm going to go to the next one.